The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So this is an exercise that you can be creative with. You don't have to do it exactly as I guided. But I think you get the basic message, the basic idea. We tend to perceive ourselves in a certain way that is only a partial. It's only part of the whole picture. So we're trying to develop a perception of our bodies that are a bit more full, a bit more realistic. Not just the surface, but through and through. Not just when we're healthy or young, strong, but through and through. Everything. What were people's experience going through that meditation?
I don't really identify a lot right at this place with a physical body. I spend a lot more time tracking the energetic or maybe even a metabody right now, and that's really new. But so when I went to like things like hair, like I do feel like these hair-like sensors. So I was able to find connections between what you were saying, or like, for example, eyes. I often feel like I actually have this antenna-like orb thing that's an eye, but it's not a, it sees, it's more like an inner eye. It's not a visual apparatus. It's more of a sensing apparatus. So there was a lot of joy in this for me, as I just wasn't identified with certain things that you were talking about. And when you said when we came back into our body, what was my body today was behind the back of my head right here is like a narrow channel of like a potential headache and a narrowing in a lot of energy getting kind of somewhat stuck, although there still is flow. So it was interesting for me to realize that there is a body in the moment, in the day, in this particular time, but it isn't, you know, what...
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? How do you define nothingness?
An absence of anything really. It's just a, sort of a peace.
Yeah. Like, how do you define nothingness? Well, absence of things.
Yeah, because absence doesn't even, it's not a, it wasn't an experience of pleasant, unpleasant, of even, it was in the beginning, I found myself reacting to the ugliness of the body without skin, and then just progressively getting to nothing, not feeling, not thinking, not just nothing, just a no reactivity to it, no feeling anything about it, just maybe a little bit of a stillness. Mm-hmm. I don't know if peace is the word, more stillness is a better definition of that.
I haven't thought this through very well, so I'm kind of thinking out loud, but there's one point when you said, look back at your body as it's meditating. I think the brain was already in front, and so there's still a skeleton, obviously. And then you said the word, well, what, you know, the body's still meditating and it's still feeling. And I thought to myself, how, at that point, all of a sudden, when the brain was down there, I thought, well, the body can't really be feeling anymore at this point, so in my mind, I was thinking the body can be feeling up until then. So I thought, you know, is that a profound change on how I identify myself?
Well, feeling is not necessarily only tied in with the brain. And also, you know, it's... this is an exercise that doesn't need to be too intellectual, right? But essentially, it's using visualization and seeing, well, what reactions does that bring up? Right? And how do we perceive ourselves?
Well, I didn't identify with the parts anymore. Pretty much
once
it.
They were piles in front of you?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier not to want to identify them.
Oh, those old things.
Fine, you can have it.
The part for me that was most interesting, I think, was actually the brain and then the organs. I've realized that I have a visceral sort of sense of self. I sort of locate it in my body, in my organs.
Literally visceral.
And yeah, right. And so that was a really interesting point of, you know, feeling that physical sensation that goes with that. You know, when that is not in this body anymore, it really did. It kind of opened up some kind of space that was, I think, really helpful. So thank you.
I had this sense of relief when the skin came off, and I had this sense that, oh, I wouldn't be able to recognize anybody. I was imagining other people, just not me, but it was nice just to be beings and not specific ones that way.
Yeah, it doesn't take very long. Take the hair and skin off. You know, all pretty look pretty similar.
Yeah, I think my experience was similar to that. I felt a sense of humility. I don't think of myself as being into clothes, but I think like when I imagine taking off the hair and the skin, it was like, okay. And fragility, a sense of fragility. I'm just this physical thing that's not going to be around very long. That's very, it's decomposable.
Right. Compostable.
Yeah, it is compostable. And then especially for me taking off the skin, I kind of visualized looking around the room and just saying, okay, I'm not an individual, really. You know, like the normal, like I think a lot of how I would normally individuate myself is like just my physical appearance, which has a lot to do with my skin and my cartilage. But if it's just like muscle and bone, I was just thinking everybody looks basically the same at this point. So,
yeah. Amazing how so much of our sense of identity, sense of being separate from others is based on such relatively superficial things. Even challenging it just a little bit, you know, makes a big difference.
I found it difficult when you were asking, you know, is this me? You know, after everything we took off, and I found myself screaming in my head that, yes, this is me.
Yes, please.
This is who I am, because in this process of trying to figure out myself, you build this image, you create this, and by taking it off, you know, who do you become? And then when everything went into dust, I wanted to find some place to be. I wanted, you know, whether it's an aura or whatever, I wanted to find some place to be, and I was having a hard time letting that go and just either not being or being all around or...
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, it's meant to be challenging. Obviously, you know, it's meant to confront this whole idea of what's me, mine. And so there is some, you know, there's a big part of us that doesn't want to be enlightened, that doesn't want to see things. And that part, it's easy for that part to say, kind of scream no and resist. And that's okay. You can kind of say, well, that's pretty normal.
excuse me. I also had a sort of an interesting reaction to the peeling off of the skin. But rather than being connected to any sort of like visual thing, I just noticed this thought of like, oh, like how nice that would be to like be free of like the sensations of like itchiness or of heat and those kinds of things, and like in sort of a roundabout way, I guess it connected me to like the suffering that comes from the body by like that opportunity for reflection on the absence of some of those things that I think of as being contained or inherent in the body.
Right. Yeah, it's challenging to our sense of self, but it's also a relief.
I found it kind of interesting that as the process went deeper and deeper, my awareness and distraction of being a social creature and being aware of other people and being aware of those people being aware of me, like the elements of me that somebody might identify with, as that stripped away, the distraction of my mind being aware of that dichotomy of other people being aware of me kind of stripped away as well. So it was a relief of distraction of sorts.
I spend a lot of time with the dying, you know, cleaning them in hospice. And I have asked people, like one woman I asked, is there a self? She was able to sort of respond, but not with language. And she looked, she had never heard that word. She was a devout Catholic, but she flickered like that made sense to her. And I really have seen, it seems as though there is a stage where people are kind of floating above the physical body. They're not exactly in the body anymore. And the ability to remember or cognate the details of their life is so shredded that they're still suspended in a being place, but it's not a limited place, that's for sure. And I guess my question is, and one particular man who can't cognate, he has Pick's disease, so there's no mental facility, there's no really physical facility. He can't quite respond to his body, but his spirit, like if I reach my hands up and touch in space, he always turns to look. So it's an idea that there's some presence of something. I don't know if you'd call it a him, but is in the room, and maybe not suffering or maybe suffering, I don't know. And I guess the question is that a self of a man that's not quite left the material world, or what is that? If it's not what is that? Is that spirit?
We'll get into the non-physical elements of identification after lunch.
Okay. I can't wait.
We'll take it systematically, you know.
For me, it was a very powerful exercise or experience, but it also felt really good to come back. But sort of ambivalent, because on the one hand, I felt like, oh, so limited again. Now I'm myself, you know. Geez, I've kind of lost this kind of transcendent moment of seeing something that I don't usually see. It's lost to come back to this limited, you know, my identity ends with my skin. But it's also like, I also had this feeling of like, God, what a miracle. All these piles are gonna go back together. It's like, how could this happen? What a miraculous. It's kind of like Annie Dillard has this reflection on what it would take to make a pine tree, and how you could never, human beings could never do it. It's so intricate, it's so complex, and yet there's millions of pine trees. And I had that feeling about my body, like, geez, look at the way the flesh kind of hangs on the bones. I didn't have to do it. It's just like, wow, what a gift, what a precious thing this body is for a little while anyway. So it's kind of ambivalent to come back to the body.
When you talked about the body being stripped of flesh, I read about how in our wars that children's skin was razor blade off and they could hear ceaseless screaming. And I thought to myself that is me, that when I am angry with someone, I will go to no ends to make them hurt. And I've felt that same pain from other people, but I don't want to feel their pain because that reconstitutes me wanting to hurt them back for showing me pain. Or when I read about KKK throwing lye in black girls' eyes, it's the same type of anger that's thrown in my eyes, and it is me. After a while, I could not. My body couldn't stay present. I kept going into a numbness that I face every day, living with people who would rather be numb. Live in some type of forward-thinking happiness with me. Yeah.
Yeah, brings up a lot, doesn't it? You know, even just the initial stages of hair and skin. You know, you can take that off. How much of a role does that play in our society these days? Right? Huge social issues for something that is so simple, so superficial. So exercises like this help to just kind of reinforce that. Or instead of just thinking of it as an intellectual exercise, you realize, you start to get a, like say, gut feeling or visceral feeling of, wow, it really is only like a millimeter of skin or a little bit of different types of hair, and then what is it that separates us? Not very much.
I'm Don, and I had a sensation come into my, it was either my neck or my jaw, and then I felt my body, and I don't know if I moved or not, but I had like a whiplash reaction. And of course, my mind has to kick in and say, well, what that was all about, but it was a really strong sensation. And when I made it, it was like, I go, well, you know, you hear people of of past lives or something like that, and they don't remember. But I was like going, "Whoa, geez, that's probably where something, some kind of memory or something of a bullet or something." And that's, it wasn't painful or anything, but it was just like, you know. And I go, I don't know if I moved or, but I did feel kind of like a whiplash afterwards. But I don't think I moved. But yeah.
Yeah, any of these meditations can bring up a whole range of old karmic results. And it's not necessary to understand exactly what the causes were, but just be aware, okay, this is interesting. Anything that happens, any new sensations, anything, even if it's strange, just, oh, that's interesting, this is interesting. Stick with it. But it does tend to accelerate the process of old karma arising. And then we start to see more and more results. Sometimes it's memory, sometimes it's physical sensation, sometimes visual images. But whatever it is, just say, oh, that's interesting. But don't get too distracted by it. It's like these things come up as trying to pull our attention away. And just keep coming back to basic meditation. So that was interesting. And then carry on.
I wonder if some of us should start setting up for the meal.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have the midday meal in a few minutes. So for anyone who has brought food, then we can prepare it on tables.
Yeah, Fred and I. Putting things out, and we'll have to heat up a few things, so it might take 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But we can get started on that now. And anyone who's brought a dish, why don't you just put it in the community room? We'll set it up, and people can come back here if that sounds okay. And then we'll set things up. And
well, why don't you and Fred start, but maybe I can give a little instruction for the meal,
sure.
And then we can all break.
Or
and
how about anyone who needs their meal heated up, just quickly put it in there and we'll heat it up. And otherwise, we'll just look in the fridges. I assume people have put things in fridges. And if something just is cold, it just needs to be set out at the last minute, you can just do that when we transition.
So, very much related to our physical existence is eating. Like with every activity that we do throughout the day, if we can bring a continuity of clear awareness to eating, how we eat, our attitudes towards eating, our reactions, then there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn about ourselves. So today, the whole process of eating, try to maintain a continuity of clear awareness, right? So that we approach lunch in the same way that we would approach a period of meditation. So instead of being a social event or eating for whatever reason, we're just doing it really like an extension of sitting meditation, walking meditation. Now we do eating meditation. So when we start, there'll be many dishes placed out on the table. Already, this is the beginning of the meditation. We haven't tasted anything, and yet already perceptions start to arise. Right? It's just shape, color, but what does that stimulate? It stimulates perceptions, memories, labels. This is this, and then very quickly that those perceptions align with our past experiences. I like this, I don't like that. I hope no one takes all of that. Right? So we haven't even started eating, we haven't even taken any food on our plate, and already, you know, we're starting to be actively involved in this interaction with the food. So just watching perceptions arise and how quickly they form based on what we see. And then as we take the food, how much is just the right amount? Right? Not too little, not too much. What is just the right amount? Different for everybody. And then we all need to figure that out. What's just the right amount of food? And then as you take food mindfully, doing things mindfully does not necessarily mean doing things slowly, especially when there's a line of people waiting. Right? You're like 20 people, and then someone is just like going, really, I'm so mindful. So mindfulness has to do with responding appropriately according to time and place. So mindfulness doesn't have anything specifically to do with speed. Right? You can do things quickly and be mindful. Or you could do things slowly and be unmindful. They're two different things. So when there's a line of people, then it is helpful just to be mindful of that, be aware of the whole situation and other people, and say, okay, I won't take too long. I'll just take what is necessary, what I need, and then that way everyone can have their food, take their food in a relatively short period of time. And then as you begin the meal, take a minute just to reflect on how amazing it is, really, to have a whole plate full of delicious, high-quality food. It's easy to take for granted, but just to remind ourselves, this is a result of a past good karma that we have, a whole plate full of high-quality food. Right? It's not something that you can just expect, as a human being. And then as you start to eat, notice there may be hunger, there may be desire, hunger and desire for the food is different. See if you can separate them out. And then what do you take first? Right? Noticing what do you take first? You go for just the nearest thing, or do you just go for your favorite thing, or you save your favorite thing for last? You learn a lot about ourselves. Because how we eat tends to be reflected in how we live our life. How we live our life tends to be reflected in how we eat. Now just observe any patterns and say, that's interesting. Sometimes these patterns we don't look at because we're busy talking, conversing around the table with other people, or just distracting ourselves. So there's no right or wrong way to do it, but just observe and see what we can learn. And then as you place the food into your mouth, notice, is there any hope of gratification? And the first bite is usually the most gratifying. But you can just watch the process and say, yes, I'm hoping for a certain gratification. And then you put the food in your mouth and there's a burst of flavor. You start to chew, pleasant feeling. See, to what degree was that gratifying? First bite is usually the highest, maybe 80% or so. And then even the first bite, halfway through, the gratification starts to drop off radically. So it starts to get boring. And then notice, we haven't even finished the first bite yet and already maybe looking for the second bite. And how often we do that in life. We haven't even finished with one thing yet and already we're looking for another thing. So just try to follow the process through, like a whole bite from beginning to end. Chewing, even when it becomes more boring, even when it becomes tedious, and then finally swallowing, and then looking for the next bite, and doing that over and over again. Right? Then we start to see things more in balance. Instead of just noticing the beginning of every bite, which is the exciting, the fun part, right? If we only pay attention to the fun, it's time to eat. If we only pay attention to to the part of our experience which is like a sensory hit or is fun or is exciting, then we don't see life in perspective. We only see one little sliver of the whole spectrum. So yes, that is part of the experience, but then also pay attention to, well, if we keep chewing, right? It's not so exciting, it's a bit boring, but it's also necessary. And then finally things come to cessation. Every bite arises, exists, and then passes away. So try to pay equal attention to the whole process from beginning to the end. And then we start to see things in balance in a more accurate way, more realistic way. And from that, then we start to learn things about ourselves. Okay. So traditionally, monks will go into the village every morning with their alms bowls, and then anyone who wanted to offer food would come out of their houses and place food in the bowls. And then we would finish that going through the village, come back to the monastery, share it out, and then we would have our meal. So we can do something similar here. I can start the process with my bowl, and then anyone who wishes to offer something into my bowl, you can take one dish and then put something in my bowl. And you can just keep scooping it in until I say, oh, thank you, that's enough. And then I'll give a blessing. This is also another traditional part of the meal ceremony. The blessing I'll chant in Pali, and it has to do with the whole idea of giving, receiving, and the many benefits that come from that. Okay. So I'll go get my bowl, and let's meet in the kitchen, and anyone who would like to offer alms, please don't be shy.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.